Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
You've got to make your free throws. I'm going to keep reminding you that all day. My free throws, I worked out this morning. I wrote a column. I gave all three daughters a kiss on the forehead and a hug. Asked everybody how they're doing. Drank some coffee. What haven't I done? I haven't fed the six-year-old's fish. Don't even get me started on that. Do not get your kids fish. Do not be okay with your kids having live fish. You're just going to end up with one more thing that you're going to have to do. I'm telling you from experience. Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports, covers the Oregon Ducks, among other things. He's a great follow on social media. Do your kids have fish, Matt Prehm?
We do not have fish, but we have a dog that I just had to chase down after he got out of the house.
That's life as a parent. You think you're getting a pet, you're getting problems.
Oh, yeah. Just almost had to dodge highway traffic. It was an experience.
I want to give an update from Las Vegas. Oregon State, you've got an ability to have Oregon State and Oregon playing in a game. It pretty much looks like a repeat of Sunday's women's college basketball game where Oregon State is had a nice start to the second half and has got a nice lead on Oregon. I'll give you an update on that later. But I want to talk about men. Dana Altman and the Ducks last night played the game I hoped that and wanted them to play, Matt. And what did you see from Oregon, especially down the stretch last night, that you liked?
I saw the conference's best team find itself and find that rhythm that we've been really wondering if they were going to hit. Because of lack of practice, the up and down of games. But the team that I picked to win the league at the beginning of the year in the media poll showed itself in that last seven or so minutes where they played tremendous full court defense. They trapped. I mean, UCLA, it's like they never saw a press before. They had no idea how to get past a trap. And on the offensive side of the ball, Oregon seniors rose to the occasion. Figueroa, game tied, 4 minutes to go. Offensive rebound, layup. Next possession, Eugene Amarui gets a layup. Next possession, Chris Duarte hits a three-pointer. Ducks up seven, timeout UCLA. Bruins get it down to five. Duarte then blocks a wide-open layup for Cody Riley, which would have brought it within three. Other end of the floor, Richardson hits a big shot. Ducks go up seven. Duarte makes another good defensive play. Richardson hits a three. Ducks up 10, 2 minutes. Best team in the Pac-12 finally shows itself.
Dana Altman has a way of doing this. And part of it, I think, is we have seen him trot out the press later in the season or maybe change the press up where they go three-quarter courts or they go half court. They have some different looks. And it confuses other teams. It's just flat good coaching, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's the best coach in the conference. And I think I have been covering Oregon athletics since 2009. I've been a fan much longer than that, growing up as a kid. I think you could make a strong argument. He is Oregon's best coach of any sport in the last 20, 25 years at Oregon. Consistent roster turnover. And yet, every single year, they are one of the best teams in the country at their sport when it matters the most.
You put him in front of Chip Kelly.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's gone as far as Chip. I know he hasn't played for a national championship, but he's made it to the Final Four, which I think making the Final Four is a lot tougher than it is to make the college football playoff or to make the BCS championship game. I mean, fewer games, and less chance of being upset in a one or, you know, win or go home scenario. And on top of that, he's recruiting now at a heck of a lot better clip than Chip Kelly was. And he's having prolonged success. I mean, they're going for their fifth. If they win on Sunday at Oregon State, they will have won the league or conference tournament 5 of the last 6 years.
They go to Vegas. They have now, I think, a psychological advantage over certainly UCLA and maybe some others. But they've got a game coming up with Oregon State that's important. Are you at all concerned that they'll be looking ahead and trip? Is that a danger?
Oh, yeah. The Oregon State game still scares, if I'm Oregon, still scares me, without a doubt. Because there's just so many games. So the stats get lost in my head and mixed up. But I think it's like Oregon State has won, I think, 5 of the last 7 games against Oregon. And you could argue that on paper these two teams are nowhere close to the same level, and it tips in Oregon's favor on paper in talent and in coaching. But that's why you play games. That's why sport is so awesome, because what you have on paper doesn't automatically translate to victories or losses. And for whatever reason, the last 3 or 4 years, the toughest team in the conference for Oregon to play against hasn't been Arizona. They've won 7 in a row against the Wildcats. It hasn't been UCLA. It hasn't been USC. It hasn't even been Colorado. It's Oregon State. They, for whatever reason, the Beavers and their zone defense and the tempo that they play at and the style of play that they play just gives Oregon fits. And so, I think this game is going to be close. I think it's going to come down to the final 5 or 6 minutes of this game. And I still think Oregon will win, but I think there's a coin flip probability that Oregon State could pull off the upset and steal the championship away from Oregon.
Yeah, and Oregon State is trying to be one of the top 5 seeds and get a first-round bye in Vegas. Oregon's playing for a conference championship. A lot on the line. By the way, that women's college game where Oregon State had a 15-point lead, it whittled to 8. It's down to 6 with 1:06 to go. So we'll get an update on that.
I have a 6-year-old coming into the room giving me updates as well.
I think it's interesting. Like, I love what's happening in women's college basketball, and I like that Wayne Tinkle and Oregon State have kind of put it together. There was a point earlier this season where I wondered if Tinkle was going to get fired. Now I'm looking at it going, does the guy get a raise?
Yeah, he's done a good job of turning a season that was kind of falling away from him around. And I think you could argue it kind of started with that win at Matt Arena a couple months ago or a month and a half ago. And ever since then, they seem to be really playing at a high level. They've improved the roster a little bit. I mean, I think this is the first time when I've watched them play this year and thought they've had more than 2 guys or 3 guys that could play on another Pac-12 teams that are in the upper half of the league. You know, Tinkle's gotten some talent in there, and he's got some experienced guys as well. And, you know, it's starting to pay off. And it's a program that, you know, they're starting to win games. I think they've won 3 in a row on the road, which is terrific. And look, Oregon wants Oregon State to be good, because when you have an advantage, when you're doing these rotations and Oregon and Oregon State travel to the Bay Area or the LA schools come up here, it used to be where everyone just spent 45 minutes in Oregon State, focused the rest of the time on Oregon. And now that Oregon State's getting better and they're winning games and they're more of a challenge, that's a positive for Oregon, because now teams just can't focus their entire week on beating Oregon, because Oregon State was such a pushover. And they're not that anymore. They're far from that.
Such a help to the travel partner. Matt Priem, 24/7 Sports, is with us. Right now, Oregon State with a 5-point lead over Oregon with 34 seconds to go in Las Vegas. Matt, look, we got used to, or maybe got spoiled by, Dana Altman developing players, and then he shifted right around the time as they were coming out of the Final Four to taking some one-and-done players. What is the state of the program now? What do you see his recruiting philosophy being right now?
It's still rooted in one-and-dones, and I think you could argue it's always been rooted in one-and-dones. And I think this is probably the biggest I know you don't mean it this way, but I think this is probably the biggest misconception with his entire program is he does one and done. He just chooses to take the 23-year-old senior that has 1 year left and then he's done, instead of taking the 18, 19-year-old freshman who's never played college basketball and then is done as often to the NBA. I think in a perfect world, he would want a roster of a recruiting class that's about four or five guys. One of those guys is the five-star guy like Nathan Biddle in this year's recruiting class, and probably not a top five or a number one player in the country, but more of the guy that's got an outside chance of playing two, maybe 3 years of college basketball, but also a decent chance of being one and done. And then ideally he wants to go and find another top 100 caliber four-star recruit. That would be Jonathan Lawson, who is signed with this team, a four-star top 100 wing. That's 6'6", 6'7". And then he wants to go and find a grad transfer. He wants to go and find another high school player that's very similar to a Casey Benson, someone who he knows is going to be in the program for three or four seasons. And then after that, it's okay. Well, what we've got one more spot. Do we need another freshman that's a five-star, four-star guy, or is it better for our team to go JUCO like we did with Chris Duarte? Or do we need another grad transfer like Amari Hardy to shore up the bench? I think that's probably his perfect scenario of a recruiting class. You get a little bit of everything. You get a couple older guys. You get a couple guys that are young but super talented, maybe a little raw, but they don't have to be your number one or your number two player like they were expecting Bol Bol and Lewis King to be. And instead, they're more like what a Jalen Terry is this season, where Terry was a four-star recruit. He was committed to Michigan State. He was a guy that every school in the country basically wanted. But he comes to Oregon and has the understanding of, hey, look, my freshman year, I'm not going to play a lot. I'm going to be on the bench. And then my sophomore, junior, maybe my senior year, I'm going to be the guy. I'm going to run the show at point guard. That's what Will Richardson did. He showed up 2 years ago and learned under Peyton Pritchard as a freshman, moved into the starting lineup this past season. And this year, pre-COVID, pre-thumb injury, he was supposed to be the number one guy. And, you know, obviously COVID, obviously injuries impacted that. Chris Duarte elevated himself. But that was kind of the arc for Will Richardson. And so I think that's kind of what they're looking for from guys that stay a couple years at Oregon.
Yeah, I think it's a tough position to be in, because if you can get uber talented players, I think it's difficult to go, no, we don't want you. But they went through a stretch there with Bol Bol, Lewis King, even back to Troy Brown, where I thought, you know, is the shift in philosophy too much? And I like what you said, you know, taking a more experienced, older grad transfer type player and having a blend, because you don't want to be that young. And I think Dana Altman was pulling his hair out a few years ago when he was, they were pretty young and maybe not listening to him as much as they do now.
He's talked about it a couple times this year where he has said, and it's shown in games. I mean, it showed in that scenario I talked about it earlier with three seniors making plays down the stretch. Lomarui and Figueroa were transfers, 1 year transfers to Oregon. Chris Duarte was a JUCO guy, but he has talked about it where he said, we don't have a lot of experience playing together, but we have a lot of experience on the court as a college athlete. And when he's saying that is he's saying, yes, we don't, they haven't gone through the rigors of a couple seasons together, but for the most part, every guy has gone through the pressure cooker of win or go home scenarios before, or the push to make the tournament, or the push to get that number one seed in the Pac-12 tournament or league championship, or wherever they're from. And they can call upon those experiences, like last night when they're down 9 points with 11 minutes to go. And the veteran players told Altman, zone is not working. We want to go man, because we think we know what to do and we know how to defend UCLA if we go man. And Altman said, you want accountability, here you go. You guys want this, let's try it, let's see what happens. They went the man, and the rest is history. They made the plays that were needed to win the game. And it's because on the floor, Oregon's team was all veteran players. They had three seniors, they had one junior, and they had a sophomore that started half the year as a freshman the year before.
Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports, with us. Pac-12 tournament, really for the men, happening midweek next week into the weekend. I think Oregon ideally would like to win the damn thing and increase their seeding, but what's best for the conference is probably somebody like Colorado or Stanford putting it all together somehow and, you know, grabbing the automatic bid because Oregon's getting in anyway. What do you think is at stake for the Pac-12 and Oregon next week?
I think USC, Colorado, if either of those two teams run the gauntlet and win it all in the conference, they probably have a possibility of getting a 4 seed, maybe, and a very off chance if chaos happens elsewhere. Maybe they get that last 3 seed, because if both those two teams have some quality quad one wins, they've got good non-con wins. Oregon's ceiling doesn't resume doesn't have as many quad one wins as those two teams do. I think Oregon's probably looking at best case scenario 5, probably more like a 6 seed if that's the case. But if I'm the conference right now, I probably want Oregon to make the conference championships, but they're the best team in the league. And so you want them to improve their resume as best they can. But at the same time, if you're talking just overall quality or quantity, you want a Stanford or you want a Colorado. I think the Buffs are in, but you know, another team.
Arizona State,
yeah,
somebody like that.
And get a bid in. And now all of a sudden, instead of Oregon, USC, UCLA, and Colorado, now all of a sudden you send 5 teams into the NCAA tournament. And maybe that 5th team catches fire in the play-in game and then gets another upset. And all of a sudden you've got 4 or 5 teams that are in the second week or the second day of the tournament. And then maybe you get 2 or 3 to advance to the second weekend. I think from an Oregon perspective, look, I threw this out on Twitter yesterday. I don't think for sure they're Dana Altman's best team in his time at Oregon, but I think they're really darn close to that 17 Final Four team. They don't have the shot blocker, but they are significantly better skilled than that other team was, that 17 team. I think Will Richardson is better than a freshman in Peyton Pritchard. I think Chris Duarte is better than Tyler Dorsey. I think LJ Figueroa is comparable to Dylan Ennis. And I think Eric Williams is not the shot blocker that Jordan Bell was, but is very much a very good defender. And then Amarui is not the shot blocker, not the rebounder that Chris Boucher is, but he is a significantly better one-on-one offensive player than Boucher was. I truly think if this team plays at their best clip, we're looking at a sleeper for the Final Four.
All right, so that team, though, Matt, had Dylan Brooks, had Jordan Bell, had some guys that you would not want to compete against because they'd want to beat you. They had some spirit animal, and Dylan Brooks was the spirit animal. Does this team have that guy and that spirit, Duarte, or do they have to find it?
Duarte is not going to be the guy that, like, Dylan Brooks, this is how I always like to talk about Dylan Brooks. He is the guy where if he is on your team, you love him. But if he is against your team, you absolutely hate him because of his mantra and his attitude. And, you know, he plays with swag and just stuff like that. Duarte doesn't have that nastiness to him and that fans just don't like. But this is a guy that you cannot stop on offense. And then he just shuts you down defensively. Twice in the last couple of games, he has gone straight up to block a big man shot at the rim or a dunk and has cleanly pulled it. I mean, I think Duarte has a case. Evan Mobley probably will win Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year. I think the last 4 or 5 weeks of this season, Duarte has put himself second in the league as the second best defender in the conference. Mick Cronin, before the UCLA Oregon game last night, said he's the best wing defender in the country. And Sean Miller, a week ago, said after Oregon beat Arizona, Sean Miller said he is going to be a first round draft pick. Yeah. Remember his name. He will be doing big things in the NBA. I truly think Duarte is the Pac-12 Player of the Year, and he's probably the best non he's probably the best wing defender in the league. He can shut down any guard that you throw out there, and then on the other end, put in 20 points. And go ahead, sorry.
We got to run to break here, but I think it's going to be fascinating and fun to watch them in March. I think Dana Altman's doing what Dana Altman does. Preem, you're the best. I appreciate you joining us.
Yep, you have a good day.
All right, Matt Preem, 24/7 Sports. Leave it here. Coming up, top of the hour, we're going to talk to an expert who's going to help you and your family in the wake of a bad tragedy last week. We talked about last week on the show, but I'll do our Big Splash without doing the actual benchmark for the Big Splash. Our Big Splash comes in women's college basketball today, where Oregon State outlasted Oregon 71-64 in the women's Pac-12 tournament in Las Vegas. Beavers eliminating the Ducks.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.